And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am Luke Ewer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this undefeated review edition as we get to go through another Gophers blowout win in Big Ten play as Minnesota absolutely dismantles Rutgers 42-7 on the road as a 30-point road favorite. And oh, by the way, there was another Big Ten team that was a 30-point road favorite, and things didn't go as favorable for them. But we'll get into that a little bit later in the episode, Luke. But before we get into this 7-0 Gopher team for the first time since 1960, why don't you give the folks a word from our sponsor?
So for those of you that, you know, are first-time listeners to the podcast, there were a number of you in the last episode. I can imagine a few more of you are now on board on the bandwagon. Welcome. We want to thank you. Our sponsor for this podcast is the Goal Line Club. If you're starting to get into college football, maybe you've never even really been into it, but you're on the board now, check out goalineclub.org. They have a couple of events that might be worth your time. One of the things is a tailgate. Their tailgate is indoors. It is across the street from TCF Bank Stadium, catered drinks, food, insomnia cookies, etc., indoor bathrooms. This is your very easy gateway into tailgating, not outdoor tailgating, indoor tailgating. So I encourage you to check that out. Also, they have preview events on Fridays. Those are limited tickets. There will be a Gopher coach at one of those, even a former player. Those, as PJ Fleck would say, are elite. If you want to save $5 and you're not a member of the Goal Line Club, you use the promo code SHELD5, and that will save you $5 at checkout. All right, Ryan, let's get into this. I know that we need to introduce your what I think you claim is your second cousin. I think it's probably a little bit more distant than that. But again, joining us is former Gopher offensive lineman Derek Burns. Derek, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome. I appreciate you guys having me back, and I'm always excited to talk college football.
All right, so the Gophers win this game handily in Piscataway, New Jersey. They come away victorious, 42-7. They bust the spread for all the people that took the under and took the points. I apologize for your loss. I don't apologize. Actually, I'm sorry for your loss. But let's get into this right away. Probably start with offense here. Derek. Tanner Morgan, you look at his stat line, 15 of 28, 245 yards, two touchdowns. Decent line if you look at things. But I think this was actually probably one of his shakier games on the season. And I know that it maybe was the result of some vanilla play calling. But, why did he maybe struggle a little bit more where he's had, some really strong stretches of late?
Well, I think that in addition to what you mentioned, Minnesota going back to a more conservative game plan, at least to start the game. They used a lot of two tight end sets. They definitely wanted to run the ball, see what Rutgers is going to give them. But in addition to that, I think that Rutgers made things, as they should, they made things uncomfortable for the Gopher passing game in the first half. And by that, I mean they ran a lot of a man-under-one scheme with one safety in the middle of the field. They ran man coverage under that and really tried to take away what the Gophers had been successful with, things like slants and deep crosses. And some of these, covering the slot receiver, for example, they even had the defensive back shaded to the inside. So you know that they were going to jump anything over the inside. And so I thought, at least to start the game, the Gophers play calling and what they were looking for was a little bit stubborn. They still wanted to try and throw, go inside with a lot of the routes. And really what Rutgers was doing was begging them to throw things like corner routes and fades and back shoulders and double moves and things like that. And as the game went on, I think you saw them transition to that and have some success with it. But early on, they were doing what a Big Ten team should do, having scouted the Gophers, trying to see what they have, what their strengths are, and set up for, as we've talked about time and time again on the Breakdown podcast, what are you going to take away from the Gophers offense? And then the Gophers obviously are going to try to counter, and that's when we're talking about balance. So short answer to your question, Luke, I think they tried to take away that middle passing game, and at least for a portion of the first half were successful in doing that and forcing the Gophers out of their comfort zone a little bit.
Yeah, and I think it was interesting. Like, you watch that game back like I did, and on Film Reviews free. It's up on Go for Illustrated right now. His footwork was my biggest concern, where Derek mentions why he may have been a little bit uncomfortable in the pocket with the way he was trying to find his first read, get to his second read. But the footwork part of it, to me, was the more concerning part. It seemed to be him fading away a lot with pressure that wasn't always there, him fading even further back in the pocket, potentially away from it. Now, a couple of times in that first half, you did see Morgan do really well in the pocket and escape pressure and make plays on the run to, I believe, Tyler Johnson and Demetrius Douglas along the sidelines. But you also saw him miss some easy passes as well in that first half. He misses Tyler Johnson and what I thought was an absolute beautiful play design from Kirk Schrock, Minnesota's offensive coordinator. We also saw him miss Bateman in the end zone before finally connecting on that exact same play, of which we'll get to a little bit later. But it just wasn't a clean game for Tanner Morgan, and that's something that we've come to expect, and that's something that we've raised our expectations for Minnesota's quarterback, especially with the way that the Rutgers defense on paper wasn't supposed to be that big of a challenge. Now, I will say, I thought Rutgers linebackers performed at a much higher level than what Illinois and Nebraska did on the road when they came to TCF Bank Stadium. Like, Rutgers linebackers and safeties were making tackles in space against Gopher running backs or Gopher receivers that Illinois and Nebraska weren't. And I think that's a credit to Rutgers for being ready to play at home. Now, Minnesota's still able to put up 42 points. Now, that first half stat line for Tanner Morgan isn't relatively pretty. Completes less than 50% of his passes for 130 yards and a score. Changes his best in the second half. He seemingly got much more comfortable, and then he goes 5 of 6 for 115 yards and a score. Chiraka starts him out with some easy type of throws with the slants, but I will say, in that second half, Morgan's footwork improved, and shocker, he was able to thread some balls into tight windows. And then you saw when Rutgers adjusted to trying to take away the slant, what does Kirk Schrock do on the first play of a drive? He goes slant and go with Morgan drawing in that safety with a head fake. And the funny part about it is, and we have that GIF on Gopher Illustrated, is when Morgan hits that safety with the head fake from the all 22, safety comes up, and then he runs into the corner who's trying to recover from being burned on a slant and go. And Tyler Johnson's wide open by 15 yards to walk in for an easy score. So, Luke, it wasn't the cleanest of games for Tanner Morgan, but you look at his stat line at the end of the day, he completes about 55% of his passes for another just incredibly explosive passing offense day, where Minnesota completes 15 passes for over 16 yards per completion. Welcome to an explosive play offense. But I think that maybe the biggest talking point about it, Luke, is Minnesota is still able to put up 35 points as an offense. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that they played particularly well. I think they played fine. But we've seen them play at such a much higher level, especially the last 2 weeks at home, where things were executing at a higher level. And they're still able to put up 35 points as an offense. And for those of you who haven't heard this stat beaten into the ground, Minnesota has now scored 28 plus points in every single game this season as an offense. That's the first time that's happened in over 115 years. So even with Minnesota's signal caller not having a great day, Minnesota's still able to put up 35 points as an offense.
And I just to close out on Tanner Morgan, like, I'm not trying to trash the guy. I think the expectations are higher given, you know, we've seen him play at a really high level. But, you know, you made a great point, Ryan. He doesn't necessarily start super fast. He usually plays much better in the second half. And as we've seen, you know, when needed, he's come through in the clutch thus far, especially in fourth quarters leading comeback drives, right? But, you know, that consistency has definitely been something that's waned a little bit for him, and that's something he can absolutely improve on going into the rest of the season. And they're going to need him to do that, you know, especially in November and obviously against Maryland as well. Okay, let's transition, talk a little bit about the running game. This is something I wanted, Derek, to get your opinion on. I know that they shuffled guys around again. You know, Lele took a seat. I saw Blaise Andrews take some reps at right tackle again, etc. You know, what were you seeing out of this run game, you know, both from a running back perspective and from an offensive line perspective?
Well, I think that starting with the offensive line, I think that the game wasn't quite as mentally sharp as it had been in what I think was a what we called a high point in the PGA Select era being the Nebraska game. That was the high water mark. And I think this game was not quite as sharp. There were some missed assignments, had a little bit of trouble with the combo blocking on the outside, with particularly between the tight ends and the tackles on a few plays. But overall, I think it was good. You have to remember that with Rutgers playing the single high safety, in many of the run situations, they did have plus one in the box. So there were a few plays, you know, specifically on some of the short yardage plays, you know, they got them blocked up, and it's the extra defender, whether it's the nickel or the safety or another linebacker in there that's coming up and making the play. So that has to be considered as well. But again, overall, I think things are a lot better on the offensive line now than they were. They just continue to get better. As far as the rotation, I guess my take on it and what I see positive in it is I think the six guys are very close. I think that I don't think the coaching staff is trying to figure out what the best five is. I think they're trying to develop six players because they know that with injuries and, you know, things happen during games, that they're trying to develop these guys. I think I touched on it last week. You know, some of those guys, particularly the young guys, getting them reps and development now is only going to pay off, you know, as the time goes on. Curtis Dunlap was an example of a guy who earlier in the year was not playing at the same speed that he is now, was probably farther behind than the rest of the guys, but that's understood because these are some of the first games that he's playing in. And he's been able to make big strides this year because he's able to get those reps. So I think the rotation is, you know, obviously there's six guys that are close in ability, and so they all deserve some playing time, but I think they're also trying to develop those six. So I think overall what looked good, like what Curtis Dunlap did. Also have to mention real quick, John Michael Schmitz continues to, you know, when a guy comes off a really phenomenal game against Nebraska, you want to see that next game and see, you know, where he lands, you know, how much of a disparity is there. And I thought he played at a very high level. So that game wasn't a fluke, and it was good to see him continue, you know, along that trend in this game. And then real quick, and Ryan, you can kind of help me out on the running backs. I mean, I thought Rodney Smith, you know, really nice to see. I think it's taken him a little bit longer this year to get up to that, to get back to, maybe is the way to say it, back to vintage Rodney Smith, and he's there, you know, starting a couple games ago and now through the Nebraska game, and certainly in this game, he's back to the guy that we knew before, that we talked about, excited to come back in the offseason. Just started a little bit slow this year, again, coming off the injury and time away. It didn't seem like his vision was quite there 100%, things like that, and you know, that was definitely back in this game, and good to see him catch some passes and do really well on both inside and outside zone.
Yeah, I think to your point, Derek, about the communication issues is what I kind of chalked it up to between the tackles and the tight ends. Well, look at what the injury situations kind of forced Minnesota to do with those two positions. At right tackle, Daniel Faalele, he starts the game, he's back at right tackle after missing a game, but maybe more importantly to the Minnesota moving company up front is Cole Keefe missed the game. Still in the concussion protocol. Sounds like he should be ready to go next week for Maryland, so that's positive. And then Minnesota also really didn't want to rush it back with Jake Paulson, who had a stinger in his shoulder from the Nebraska game. Minnesota thought that they could get through the Rutgers game, that they could get them as close to 100% for Maryland prior to the bye. So that's what they did. So you saw Brevin Spanford and you saw Bryce with them get their most snaps offensively of the season. So you combine that with Daniel Faalele at right tackle, and that's where you saw a couple of times on outside zone there that there was a miscommunication between the tackle and the tight end in terms of who had the guy, and each one assumed. And when you assume, you make it's not great. I don't want to get the explicit tag on this podcast, Luke, so it's not great. That's where Rodney Smith got tackled in the backfield. And with Rodney Smith even, I mean, I wrote about this in my five takeaways piece on Gopher Illustrated. It's so rewarding for me as someone who remembers his days at Mundy Mills back in high school, where he tore his ACL and was under the radar. And then he comes to Minnesota and He plays 3 years in an offense that was absolutely putrid from a passing game standpoint, which meant that he saw loaded boxes year after year after year with an offensive line that I didn't think was particularly great. Now in his seemingly 15th year at Minnesota, he's finally able to play in an offense that is opening up running lanes for him, is opening up the box for him. And he's taken advantage of that. This is the fourth consecutive game for Rodney Smith with 100 rushing yards. Rodney Smith now is averaging over 150 total yards per game through four Big Ten games. We're talking about a guy in Big Ten play that's averaging 7.5 yards per touch. And on the season, he's averaging nearly 6 yards per carry. This is exactly what Rodney Smith came back for. This is exactly the situation he wants to be in. It's an undefeated team with an offense that is performing at a high level, and he is the feature point, and he is the bell cow. Now, I know that Mo Ibrahim continues to do Mo Ibrahim things. I thought that he played better with the outside zone running scheme. I still think he's best in inside zone. And I know that I've gotten plenty of questions about Shannon Brooks. And why is Shannon hurt? He only got 5 carries. I talked about it with Justin Gard this morning on KFAN. He and I are both not concerned about it from an injury standpoint. I think it comes into more of a game script standpoint where there's no need to burn Shannon Brooks' legs against Rutgers. You're going to need him more against Maryland, Penn State, and Iowa coming up. Plus, my own narrative that I kind of took a stroll down narrative street for is Mo Ibrahim is from the East Coast. He's from the area out in the East Coast near New Jersey. And why not give the young guy a chance to feature himself in front of a lot of friends and family? So I don't have a lot of concerns about Shannon Brooks right now. I think you're going to see him get back into that double-digit carry range at home against Maryland next week. But I did think that, you know, the offensive line, just the rotation-wise, I think it's going to be extremely interesting to follow because with Fa'alele now back, they also rotated him out along with Dunlap and along with Andrews. So the only two real mainstays are Schluter at left tackle and Connor Olson somewhere on the interior. That's where the flexibility and the versatility of a guy like Blaze Andrews, who has now played every position along the offensive line except for center in the last 8 games, and he started games at each of those 4 positions, both tackle and both guard spots. You see him going from guard to tackle in the same game and switching sides of the line. Derek can attest that is extremely difficult to do. And to see this offensive line, especially on those touchdown runs, and they were opening up massive, massive holes for Smith and for Ibrahim to run through. You have to be encouraged by the way that Minnesota's offensive line played. I don't think they played an elite level. I think they played well. It doesn't matter. They still scored 35 points. They still are performing at a high level on this offense. And Luke, I know that you also want to get into the fact that Tyler Johnson continues to break records.
Yeah, I do want to get into that, but I also want to just touch on one last thing on the offensive line. We need to give credit where credit is due. We were hard on Sam Schluter last year, and I think rightfully so. But, dude, that guy is by far the most improved player. He has probably been the most consistent offensive lineman, and I think he deserves the credit. There's a reason he's the one that's sticking on the field, right? He's not the one that needs a breather, etc. And, you know, kudos to him. He is by far the most improved player, in my opinion, on this team, and he just needs a little love there. So I hope that that was enough. I know Derek, you've been very high on him as well, etc. But man, I, you know, kudos to him. You know, left tackle was a really big question mark, and he has erased those concerns thus far. Okay, let's talk a little bit about pass catchers. Like you said, Tyler Johnson continues to climb the record books. And it feels like at this point, Rashad Bateman is a walking highlight reel, you know, game in and game out. Another incredible catch there, almost a second as well. This pass catching group also mixed in Brevin Spanford. And you see the position, you see the offensive flexibility that Shraka has when he's in the game. Like you mentioned already, Derek, the fact that they have a potent passing game is just a real luxury that maybe Gopher fans haven't been accustomed to in years past. But these pass catchers are the real deal. And again, they actually had a pretty nice day, Derek.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun to see, you know, the output and the end result of these guys making good catches and the productivity is fun. But For a guy like me who enjoys the schemes and kind of the cat and mouse, it's so interesting to see Kirk Soraka, particularly with the way that he lines up. Again, as the game wore on, they went into more 3 and 4 wide receiver set. What he does with Rashad Bateman is really very interesting. He's the guy, Rashad Bateman is the guy that challenges the defensive coordinators on their safety play. So although we know that Tyler Johnson and Ottman Bell and Douglas and those guys all have done very well, the guy that they line up to try and test the defense on where they position and how they scheme is Rashad Bateman. So example in this game, when they found out that they were, we're going to go single high safety, they started lining him up in the slot to force Rutgers to either put him over the top and double team him. And if they weren't going to do that, he was going to run that corner and fade route, and they were just going to keep running it. And I know that the one they missed in the end zone came back with the same exact play. Rutgers actually went into a cover zero a second time, but they ran the same exact route, same exact formation and everything, and threw it again and got a better throw. And he was able to beat the defensive back quicker with the cover zero. And so it's really interesting to see how they play that, because we've talked a lot about the defenses, if they're lining up to take away the pass, then the Gophers are going to run it and vice versa. But even within the passing game, they do things like they line Rashad Bateman up out on the split side by himself. Well, if they don't put a safety over there, they're going to throw to him in single coverage. And they'll also line him up in the slot. If they don't put a safety over the top of him, they're going to throw a corner out and things like that. So it's interesting to see how they can utilize him. And sometimes he can get quiet during games or just portions of games. And I can tell you that the reason for that is they're using him, decoy probably isn't the right answer, but they're using him to move the defensive front so that he may be running a safety out of the box. He may be, carrying some defenders with him to open up some of those underneath routes. So interesting to see that just from the schematic standpoint. And then, like I said, the end result and the output is a guy like Tyler Johnson who's able to just consistently, his route running just continues to be his big strength, and he's able to, do things like run that slant and get inside a receiver who are already playing with inside leverage, and that's not an easy thing to do. So overall, as you talked about, when they overcame some of those schematic adjustments early in the game, those guys caught up quickly and had a good game.
And to Derek's point about Rashad Bateman, and many of you may be wondering, well, why are defensive coordinators so worried about Rashad Bateman and not necessarily Tyler Johnson? Well, I think you have to look at their skill sets. Tyler is a great short to intermediate receiver, but he doesn't necessarily have that deep speed. Now, you look at Tyler's day and he has the 56-yard touchdown. Well, it's not like he took the slant to the house. Is he capable of doing it? Yes. But it's Bateman's top-end speed. And the way that Kirk Soraka wants to use him vertically is what really challenges defenses. And that's why him drawing and safety over the top like we've seen in previous weeks really opens things underneath for Chris Ottman Bell, for Demetrius Douglas, for Tyler Johnson. And that's, to Derek's point, why you may see Rashad Bateman go quote-unquote quiet during games. Well, it's not like he's got one-on-one coverage and he's not winning it. It's because he has a safety over the top or he's got someone else looking down on him. Now, Bateman's catch was, if you haven't seen it already, we got the video up on Gopher Illustrated. It's about as Odell Beckham as it gets with a guy holding his jersey, and it was pass interference on the play that Minnesota declined. And you could even make the argument that next ball where Tanner threw it back to Bateman there in double coverage, you could argue maybe that was a quote-unquote easier catch for Bateman there. And I think that we also need to talk about, and Derek touched on it briefly, the disrespect that Kirk Soraka did on that second touchdown of the game where – he ran the exact same play from the exact same formation. That's something you do on Madden 19 where your quarterback just doesn't make the throw and you're like, well, I'm just going to run that same exact play again. I know that they're not going to stop it. So what does Kirk Soraka do? He goes Madden on the bit and he throws the exact same route with the exact same formation, and Tanner Morgan just makes the throw this time. I thought that was peak Kirk Soraka right there, saying, I know that this works. Tanner make the throw, and this is going to work. And Tyler just continues to do what he's done since P.J. Fleck has gotten here, and he breaks records. Tyler Johnson is now second all-time in Golden Gopher football history with 26 receiving touchdowns. and no one in the long and illustrious Golden Gopher football history has recorded more 100-yard receiving games than Tyler Johnson. He's got, I believe he's 5 touchdowns behind Ron Johnson's record, and he's got 6 games to go. I think Ron may be not incredibly happy with the way that things are going to go, but the way that this Minnesota passing offense continues to flow, it's going through Tyler Johnson, it's going through Rashad Bateman, and if the ancillary pieces and Douglas and Ottman Bell do something great, but this is clearly the focal point of Minnesota's offense. It's get the ball to Tyler Johnson. It's get the ball to Rashad Bateman, Luke.
All right, so before we talk a little bit of defense, Ryan, can you give us a word from our sponsor?
Yes, our newest sponsor is the Burns Insurance Agency, owned by my father in Oakdale, Minnesota. Now, last week, he was predicting a Gopher win. Minnesota won. He was a 30-point road favorite. My father had no idea about that at the time, but he certainly wants to congratulate P.J. Fleck and his team on moving to 7-0 for the first time since 1960. And hopefully getting to 8-0 for the first time since, I believe, the 40s. Now, just like the Gophers continue to average 450, 475 yards a game of offense, the Burns Insurance Agency routinely saves their clients at least that amount on their home and auto insurance. As many business insurance accounts average that savings 3 times that. We're talking $1,500 to $2,000 of savings per business account. Now, being a local independent insurance agent in downtown Oakdale, Minnesota, he's offering great savings, great coverage, and above all else, elite customer service. This is what you can get at the Burns Insurance Agency. So if you want somebody to take a free look at your home, your auto, your commercial insurance, it's not sexy to talk about, but it's something that can put a lot of money back in your pocket and save you down the line if you do not have the correct insurance that you're looking for. If you want to learn more, go to insurancebyburns.com.
All right, so let's talk a little bit of Gopher defense. The Gophers only gave up 7 points to Rutgers. They, again, continue their strong play in Big Ten play of holding opponents to, you know, meager points per game. I don't actually have the number up in front of me. I can calculate it if one of you two wants me to, but currently I have not done that. but 189 total yards for Rutgers on the day. They had a pretty non-existent passing offense, only 48 yards on 9 of 19. So much better than the week before where they only had 1 yard. But, you know, suffice it to say, I don't know how much you can really take out of this because I think Rutgers' offense was actually fairly bad. I guess they ran the ball all right. Maybe their offensive line played all right. But Derek, what did you see from this what did you see from this defense? Maybe starting with like defensive linebackers.
Yeah, the Gophers front 7 on defense was keyed to stop the run, much like Rutgers. Actually, they also used +1 in the box in most running situations, and so I think that's what they wanted to take away. And if you look, I do agree. The Rutgers offensive line actually wasn't too bad up front. They looked fairly solid. Now, the skill positions were another story. They struggled mightily, particularly in the pass. And so if you're the Gopher scheming for this game, it would make sense that they tried to scheme to take away the run because Rutgers just struggled so much passing the ball. But, the front 4 for the Gophers defense, I think, just continues to get better. And you're seeing now that in passing situations, they're able to get more pressure with just a 4-man rush. Gophers did, although they played pretty conservatively from a play calling standpoint, they did occasionally mix in pressure with some cover zero blitzes on particularly in passing situations. And then they also continue to do some exchange blitzes where they bring a linebacker or a secondary player and then drop one of those defensive ends and into pass coverage, defensive, even the tackle at times in the pass coverage. And so, I think the front 7 played fairly solid, particularly the front 4 on defense. Just continues to get better. The 3 technique, as Ryan touched on last week, continues to do well. And I think that we talked a bit before we started recording tonight. Carter Coughlin, I think because that 3 technique is playing better, he continues to play very well. We talked about the fact that he's maybe not putting together 4 and 5 sack games that show up in the stat line, but he is getting pressure, making plays in the run game, causing turnovers like he did in this game, was contributed towards the interceptions. He is fundamentally becoming a more complete player with each game. And so I guess all that is to say that the front seven is a very solid game, starting with stopping the run, but then also getting some pressure in the pass game.
The big disclaimer is, yeah, we're going to talk about the Gopher defense, but we also have to talk about how Johnny Langen is horrendous. He made some throws and decisions that were just mind-boggling, and that's a part of why Rutgers has really, really struggled in Big Ten play. Part of the reason why they had to fire their head coaches, because they were in year four under Chris Ash, and this is what we're looking at. Now, this is the portion of the podcast where I get up on my soapbox and scream into the ether that stop box score scouting Carter Coughlin. I've talked about this for seemingly weeks. Yes, the stats and the box score aren't what they were the last 2 years. Now, why is that? Well, number one, it's because teams aren't stupid anymore. They know that they need to dictate what they're doing as an offense towards Carter Coughlin. So that's where they've been chipping with running backs, chipping with tight ends, changing the offensive line protection scheme so that there's inside help if the offensive tackle is going to set for an outside rush. Now, what's the biggest thing that can help? Derek mentioned it. If Minnesota's three techniques and Sam Renner, and I thought Keontae Schott was really, really good against Rutgers. If those two guys continue to do well with their one-on-one coverage and they continue to get interior pressure like they have been at the clip that they have been, that's going to slide protection away from Carter Coughlin, and it's going to go back inside to try and stop Minnesota's three techniques. Now, Carter Coughlin was named on the PFF National Player of the Week, or National Team of the Week, and that should be no surprise to anyone listening to this. Yeah, the box score stats don't look necessarily impressive. He has four tackles, 1.5 for loss, 0.5 a sack, 2 pass breakups, and a forced fumble. And maybe his most impactful play doesn't even show up in the box score. He is the one who deserves all the credit for that pick six that Antoine Winfield got. He's the one that got off the tight end, showed in what I thought was an elite burst to get right on top of Langen. As he gets to the top of his boot, Langen gets flustered, makes a horrendous pass, and Winfield just happens to be standing right there, has it hit him in the chest, and he just gets to run forward for a touchdown. That's Carter Coughlin forcing that play with Winfield getting the credit. Now, Winfield also makes a sensational diving interception earlier, but I think Coughlin has been playing really well of late, and I'm still convinced that he is hurt. He's playing through the groin injury, but that's not something he or PJ Fleck are going to talk about or confirm or deny. So I just think that this defensive line continues to do what they've done, and that's get pressure with four of late. And I cannot stress to you how important that is to do. If you can get pressure with four in the Big Ten, it just opens up so many different things for you to do as an entire defense. Now, we'll talk about the Kamal Martin injury here in a second, but Minnesota's defensive line continues to do what they've done all of Big Ten play, essentially, and that's stop the run, and that's generate pressure with four. If you can do those two things, you're going to be in a lot of ball games, Luke.
All right, so yeah, we do need to talk about Kamal Martin before we close out the front seven. He went down. It actually looks like a non-contact injury from what I saw. I don't know if I'm sure Fleck hasn't talked about it. That's not really anything that they normally do, and plus he hasn't had a press conference. Post being home, I assume he's going to have like an MRI or something like that. Looked like a knee to me, but again, I'm not a medical doctor, so I'm not going to prognosticate on what that might be. I think the better thing that we should maybe talk about in regards to Kamal is, what's behind him. But additionally, Ryan, if you have any intel, I think our listeners would appreciate that. But then we better talk about, what's behind him, because in some ways, to me, that's a little scary.
It is. It should be. Kamal Martin has been playing at such a high level in Big Ten play, especially, and just throughout the entire season. He is either forcing multiple turnovers a game, or he's in double-digit tackles leading the team. And even through 2.5 quarters before he went down, he was leading the team in tackles. Now, I don't have good news, and nothing has been confirmed, but I'm not expecting Kamal Martin back anytime soon. By anytime soon, I mean especially before the bye. Now, there is optimism that it was not an ACL tear, but that's something that I think we're going to learn here in the next 24, 48 hours, is Fleck gets to do some more media here Monday and Tuesday. But I am not expecting Kamal Martin to be ready anytime in the near future. So what does that mean? It means you're going to see a lot of Braylon Oliver and maybe some Mariano Sorry-Marin and maybe some Thomas Rush. Because what you saw when Martin went down is Oliver is the one coming into the game and getting his snaps. Now, that could completely change as Minnesota knows how long Kamal Martin is out. They'll have an entire week to game plan for Maryland, and they'll have to see which of their second-year linebackers best work for what they want to do as a defensive scheme. I know that many people have asked me, how concerned are you about the drop-off? Well, folks, there's going to be a drop-off. Kamal Martin was playing like the MVP of the Gopher defense. You're not going to have a guy ready to step in and really fill those type of shoes. That shouldn't be realistic because it's not. So it's going to be about how does Braylon Oliver step up into his new role? How does Mariano Sorry-Marin against the bigger teams like Iowa and Wisconsin step up into his bigger role? And can Thomas Rush find a footing as a guy that had a lot of hype from guys like myself coming into the season? Can he find himself a role? But I mean, there's going to be a drop off in play. And I mean, I think that even I'm going to be very curious to see what Joe Rossi does schematically. And that's where I'm already looking forward, just like the rest of you are, to next week's episode where Derek can get more into the X's and O's about what Joe Rossi changed with Kamal Martin out of the lineup and how things are changing. Does Williamson have more on his plate as essentially a Sam linebacker, or excuse me, a Will linebacker? Does Braylon Oliver do some more things? Does Thomas Barber move into a different role? There's a lot of question marks about it, but like I said, I'm not expecting Kamal back anytime soon, which is entirely unfortunate considering he was playing so well in his senior season. I also know that a lot of folks have asked me, what's the redshirt situation for him? He's played, I believe the Rutgers game was his fifth game of the season. So you can't get the redshirt back there with a medical. I just don't see the NCAA allowing that. So if that was Kamal Martin's final snap of his Gopher football career, at least he went on a high note, because the way that Kamal had been playing in these final weeks, it's just throughout the entire 2019 season, in my eyes anyway, he had been the MVP, Luke.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question on that. Let's touch quickly on the secondary. Derek, a couple of interceptions for Antoine Winfield, also an interception for Philip Howard. By the way, he looked like a fine wide receiver. Maybe he was for a second there. but Derek, maybe just real quick, some thoughts on the secondary and what we saw out of them in this Rutgers game against a really putrid pass game from Rutgers.
Well, I thought they played well, first of all, actually, in run support. I thought Coney Durr had a very nice game coming up. A lot of the runs to as a force player are outside. And then in terms of pass coverage, I think in this case, the statistics would tell the correct story in that they were able to come up with several big plays. So I think that it'll be interesting to see, as Ryan touched on, the changes that they make at the linebacker position will also could potentially affect what they're doing on the outside. We talked about in, I believe it was the Illinois game, one of the things they did to protect or guard against Illinois' running game was put the outside defenders on island man coverage. And so I would expect that's probably a lot that you're going to see in the Maryland game. And if they're looking to give some help to the linebackers, and they bring a guy like Chris Williamson in as a run defender, or change up what they're doing inside, that's going to put more pressure on those guys outside. But just, yeah, real quickly, in the Rutgers game, I thought they had a good game, able to read and react. Phillip Pollard does a good job, stays on the wide receiver's hip, is able to turn his hips, stay in the wide receiver's pocket, and then, of course, go up and make a play on a ball that was admittedly underthrown, but being a former wide receiver, he's able to go up and make a good play. And then Antoine Winfield as is his MO, he's able to be in the right place at the right time and read the quarterback's eyes. And with those outside defenders playing some more of that island man coverage, it allows Winfield to roam more and play the quarterback's eyes. So overall, good game for him, and obviously more tests coming up. But it'll be interesting to see what they do as well with some of these things that have to shift on defense with Kamal's injury.
I want to show some love to Coney Durr. I know you talked on him a little bit, Derek, but if you're looking for like an unsung hero type, like Sam Renner had been through the first six games, I don't think enough people are giving Coney his due. where you look at the box score stats once again, and 12 total tackles in the season through seven games doesn't look like a lot, but he's already got a career high 7 passes defended, and he has been really, really good in that man coverage. Now, he, St. Juiced, you saw Philip Howard recover and get his first career interception because Terrell Smith was in a walking boot on his right foot when I saw him at the complex on Tuesday or Wednesday. So no Terrell Smith working into the rotation. What does that mean? That means Philip Howard gets an opportunity to play, and he shows off that wide receiver skill by, number one, he gets a little bit flat-footed on that double move that the Rutgers receiver tried to put on him. He recovers, catches up to the hip, locates the ball, high points, it comes down. Luke Sky, Philip Howard, former Gopher receiver, really showed it that way on Saturday. And then Antoine Winfield, this guy is always in the right spot at the right time. And some would say that's luck, but I think that just has to do with intuition and having a great football IQ to be in the right place at the right time. To be a safety, you have to read the quarterback's eyes and know what his tendencies are, especially once he breaks the pocket. So you look at on his first interception, Eladi Boudair and Howden are right in his face. So what do? You continue to roll that way, see where the pass is going, and makes a sensational diving interception. On the second one, he rolls right. Coughlin is right in his face, forces an errant throw. Winfield is in the right place at the right time, and I don't think that's a coincidence. Gets his second interception of the day. So I think that there's going to be more stress placed on this Gopher secondary if Kamal is out for an extended period of time, but I think that they've shown in the first 7 games of the season anyway, Luke, that they can handle it. But before we get into kind of more big picture things and talk about the bane of my existence, which is Gopher special teams, why don't you give the folks a final word from our sponsor, the Goal Line Club.
All right. So for the Goal Line Club, if you're going to be going to the Maryland game, which I think you should, and you are considering joining the Goal Line Club tailgate, I'd encourage you to sign up sooner rather than later, because currently I think that we have some concerns about fire code related things. So Shelled 5 is going to save you $5 if you're not a member of the Goal Line Club. Use that, save a little bit of money, join Ryan and I at the tailgate. It is going to be elite. Mixed drinks, beer. There's obviously, there's also catered food, Insomnia cookies. It is truly an elite experience, and I do not use the word elite. I do not overuse it, actually. I use it just the right amount, so it is actually that good. Again, indoor bathrooms, etc. And I know, Ryan, you're really big on these previews at Jack's Cafe.
Yeah, that was, when the one I went to before the Nebraska game, Jim Banikos was at Minnesota's defensive line coach, and just being able to be in kind of a more intimate setting where it's 40, 50 people, 60 in the room, and you're able to have access to number one, all 22 film, which I would do many, many interesting things in my life to get access to all 22 game tape within 10 hours of a Gopher game being over, but that's here nor there. But to hear the position coach break down his position with all 22 film, you learn so much and you become so much smarter and you become so much more well-educated as a fan. To me, it's worth the $30 that it is, and I'm all for it. I mean, I can't wait to get back there very, very soon.
All right, so let's chat a little bit about, what's coming up ahead here for the Gophers. Obviously, there's a Maryland game, and then you've got a pretty grueling stretch in November. But I actually just learned that that Wisconsin lost Illinois. Did they really lose, Ryan? Is that actually what happened?
Luke, as the kids would say, you absolutely hate to see it, that Wisconsin, as a 30-point road favorite, loses on a last-second field goal after 41 minutes of possession. 41 minutes in a 60-minute game of possession, you somehow find a way to lose. It's almost like Wisconsin not having played. This is their first road game. That was their first road game since August. Yeah, they look great at home. Many, many teams do, including Minnesota. But where you earn your hay is on the road in the Big Ten. Now, before we kind of get into Wisconsin, I do want to shortly touch on special teams, Luke. One day we will get a clean performance because Michael Lance misses a chippy and they give up the long kick return. But we'd also be remiss, Luke, if we didn't mention how cool of a moment was that for Casey O'Brien. I mean, I've watched that over and over again. He's beaten cancer four different times, and he finally gets what College Game Day. They've already done a special about it. If you haven't watched it already, check it out on the YouTube or somewhere else on the internet. But all he wanted to do was play a snap as a Golden Gopher, and he knew that the limitations of his body was only going to allow him to be the holder. For him to hold three different times and then have that special moment with PJ on the sidelines, it got really, really dusty from where I was watching the game, Luke, and I just thought that was so, so cool to see. And it's, maybe I'm biased, but everybody who thinks PJ Fleck is fake and he's a used car salesman or he's a snake oil guy, he's legit. He is who he says he is, and if you don't like his personality, that's on you. Because he is a real human being. And to see him show that real emotion on the sidelines, that's so cool. So cool to see, especially as a media member knowing that. But with the Big Ten West generally, and you're looking at, and once again, yes, it's Maryland Championship Week, but we're over halfway through the season now. And if you haven't heard already, the Gophers are atop the Big Ten West solely for the first time in the existence of the Big Ten West for Minnesota. That's pretty damn cool.
Okay, I just want to go back real quick. Wisconsin lost Illinois. Did I read that right? Did they fear the beard?
The Fighting Lovie Smiths put up a hell of a fight in that fourth quarter. While they may have figured out some things on how to, number one, slow down Wisconsin's running attack, and number two, maybe more importantly, how to score points on Wisconsin's defense. And if you haven't heard already, Luke, Wisconsin has to travel to Ohio State, which for my money right now is the best team in America.
Okay.
Alabama without Tua is not.
Yeah.
LSU, you can make an argument with Joe Burrow. Oklahoma, their offense is really good. But the way that Ohio State's offense and defense are playing right now, you're going to be looking at a two-loss Wisconsin team heading into November along with Iowa. I mean, there's a realistic chance as Minnesota opens as a 17-point home favorite this weekend that Minnesota could have a two-game lead in the Big Ten West going into November, which is absolutely wild to me, Luke.
All right, so Derek, real quick, I heard your former head coach on the radio say that, you know, whenever the Gophers were big favorites or, I should say like double-digit point favorites or they knew they were playing a bad team, he would often say, or the message would have been something to the extent of, you know, this team can't beat you, only you can beat yourself. So talk to me about what it was like, you know, when you were playing, whether it was you were a big favorite or how difficult is it to be a Wisconsin in that situation, you know, going to Illinois, you know, a big favorite with big expectations and a huge game on the horizon with Ohio State.
Well, I think what he's talking about is if you were to look at it from Illinois' perspective, and we've had this same conversation, frankly, about the Gophers in the past being big underdogs, the honest answer is in order to win the game, you're going to need some help. And by that, I mean, whether it's turnovers, whether it's something, you know, big plays, things that happen during the game, you're going to need a few of those, sometimes many of those things to go your way. And so to flip that, I think what Coach Nathan's talking about is if you don't allow those things to happen, if you don't turn the ball over, if you don't give up the chunk plays, if you don't have special teams gaps and things like that, that you can or since they can't, but you're not going to lose the game. And so that game against Illinois was the classic example. I believe two turnovers in the fourth quarter, if not the end of the fourth quarter, go the way of Illinois. That obviously played a huge factor. And the thing that I was, you know, waiting for, as you can say, in terms of Wisconsin, is they have just blown away teams because they've been such a game script team. Wisconsin's developed this program and this way that they like to play for 20 plus years. And if you allow them to, and easier said than done to stop them, but if you allow them to operate the game at their script, it is very difficult to beat them. And so I had a chance to see a couple of their games earlier in the year. And I just found myself saying, you know, if anybody's going to beat this team, it's going to be someone that gets them off their game script. And again, easier said than done, but like Ryan said, the first part of that is you're not going to shut them down rushing the football, but just get them off of their script of, you know, they're picking up 6-7 yards on first down, putting themselves in second and two, third and one, things like that, force them to get out of that script. And then that defense, which has been so lights out, you know, we all probably question what, how much of that was a result of the game script. It's, you know, I don't want to take any too much away from them, but just being honest, it's easier to play defense when you're up 35 to nothing. The offense becomes one dimensional. You just don't have to defend as much. And so, I think what you saw was a combination of those things on Saturday, those things, those scripts being flipped upside down, probably got them uncomfortable. And ultimately, again, with those couple turnovers, you know, Illinois was able to nudge things their way.
All right.
And that's where,
go ahead, Ryan.
I mean, that's where, like, no one's saying Minnesota's going to go 13-0 and we want Bama, yada, yada, yada. I mean, what we're saying is, yes, Minnesota 7-0 since the first time since 1960. You should enjoy that. And we're not counting the, you know, counting our chickens before they hatch, but we're getting closer and closer to the end of the season. And that's where I think we need to start to talk about things like this, where if Minnesota can take care of Maryland this weekend and continue to, or at least end their revenge tour on a good note, where the 2018 revenge tour was Illinois kicked the snot out of them in 2018. So did Nebraska. Minnesota took care of both of them at home this year, and now they have an opportunity to beat Maryland for the first time in the PJ Fleck era. This isn't the same Maryland team. They have a new head coach. Their starting quarterback has been out the last two games with a high ankle sprain. Sounds like he's not going to be able to play against the Gophers this Saturday. This is a Maryland defense, though, that just gave up 500-plus yards and 34 points to a backup quarterback at home against Indiana. Like, Minnesota should win this game. I could care less if they win by 1 or 51. You're 8-0, you're 8-0. And that's the big point here is, if you can win this game, and then you look at what Wisconsin has this weekend, they have Ohio State. They're probably not going to win. And you look at Iowa. Well, Iowa is, let me see who Iowa has, but even still, Iowa and Wisconsin have to play each other yet. And now we start to get into the math. Is Minnesota doesn't have a Big Ten loss yet. Whereas when you get into that Iowa versus Wisconsin weekend, which is the same weekend Minnesota plays Penn State, even if Minnesota loses that, one of those teams is potentially going to eliminate themselves from the race because they would have three Big Ten losses. So Iowa is on the road at Northwestern this weekend. I believe Northwestern is coming off a bye. Pat Fitzgerald, I think, is a pretty dang good Big Ten football coach. And while their offense has been utterly pathetic, they still have a really good defense, especially at home. So things continue to shape up well for Minnesota to have a legitimate shot in this Big Ten race. Now they have to take care of Maryland this weekend before heading into a bye. But then we just start to get into the math. And the games are running out. And if Minnesota just wins the games they're supposed to win, where you're going to be favored against Maryland, you're going to be favored against Northwestern on the road, and if you can sneak out a win against Penn State at home, you can sneak out a win on the road at Connecticut for the first time in 20 years. And to be honest, and Derek and Luke, I'd love to get your thoughts. I don't, you know, here we are going into late October, and we know a lot more about these Big Ten teams remaining on the schedule. And I think each one of them has their warts outside of Ohio State, but Minnesota doesn't have to worry about them until hopefully, fingers crossed, potentially in December. Now, Penn State is still a really good team, but Penn State almost let Michigan right back in the game. They snuck past Iowa. This isn't an Ohio State caliber team. Now, I still think they're really, really good. I still think they're going to be favored, as they should be when they come to town. But you've seen Iowa not necessarily play as well as what we thought they were going to play coming into the year. Jack Plummer just put up 20 points on them in Kinnick as Iowa wins by 6. Now, in the two games before Minnesota has to play Iowa, they have Northwestern this weekend, and then they get Wisconsin in Camp Randall before Minnesota goes to Kinnick. And then you saw Wisconsin just lose to what I think is a bad football team in Illinois. I'm not, you know, whatever the percentages may be, you know, some of these games, what we thought in August, are looking much more realistic for Minnesota. Now, it's easy to say that because they've won 9 straight games and they haven't, you know, necessarily been tested here in Big Ten play, but that's the point. they haven't necessarily been tested in Big Ten play because they're playing so well offensively and defensively. So, Eric, when you look at kind of the way the schedule is setting up, how do you think these guys, I mean, you being a former Golden Gopher, how can they stay focused and just make sure that they don't have that trap game? They don't have that Maryland this weekend where it's going to be 55 degrees and sunny on Saturday, folks. We have an undefeated Golden Gopher football team in town, and it's going to be 55 and sunny in late October. Get to TCF Bank Stadium if you can to show PJ Fleck and this team some support. But how do they stay focused? Because you can't count your chickens before they hatch, but you also have to know the games are dwindling down. There's only 5 more games in the schedule for Minnesota in this regular season, and they already have a 1-game lead.
Yeah, look, what you have to do is, and it's hard to explain this without using some really overused cliches, because frankly, some of them do fit, but your focus becomes narrow. And you do, you know, one of the cliches is you got to block everything out. And I can tell you, that is accurate. The noise, you know, if you can think of a volume button and think of white noise, you know, nothing that you can hear clearly, but just background noise, that volume button just continues to go up as you know, rivalry games and, you know, big games for one reason or another, and just kind of the buzz, if you can call it that, just continues to get louder and louder. And so how you combat that or get through that is just continuing to narrow your focus and staying, you know, keeping your eye on what's in front of you. And, you know, to throw one more cliche in there, but again, it's accurate, is just to focus on that week alone. And you do, that is truly what happens. I know it's one of the things that's fun for me to be a fan now, is I get to, you know, talk with you guys about the rest of the schedule and talk about how things are shaping up. And you don't really, you try not to, and really you can't have that luxury when you're in it. I mean, it is really a week to week. Those guys have a scripted out, you know, how they come back after a game and work on the previous game for maybe half a practice, and then they've got their next 3 or 4 practices all mapped out, and it's all focused on that next opponent. So that's what that is what you focus on. You do take it, build upon what you've built so far, and and focus on what it takes to, from a scheme standpoint and execution standpoint, to be competitive in the next game. And if I can just throw in my 2 cents, you know, I think fans, everybody's fan experience is different. Some people really like to, you know, they get excited about rankings, and other people get excited about rivalries, and there's no right or wrong answer here. But just from my perspective, this is why I love college football, is just game by game, how important these games are, these big games, and they involve rivalries, they involve they're all conference games. And to me, it's just fun that, you know, I would never, personally, I don't take the attitude of, well, the Gophers have played really well, but, well, I'm, you know, well, what happens when we, you know, look at how well Penn State's playing, or, you know, before the Illinois game, maybe Wisconsin looked, you know, at times unbeatable. And how, I mean, that's what you should want, you know, as a fan, and certainly as players, you want to play a top 10 team, and you want to have that team at home if you can, or even, you know, you're up to the challenge to go into, you know, an away game in the Big Ten, some of the most historic college football stadiums in the country. They're all national television. I mean, that's what we should want as a fan. I'm certainly going to enjoy it, no matter what the outcome is. And we haven't been able to say that, at least on this level, as fans, for the numbers you've been mentioning, Ryan, sometimes 30, sometimes 50, sometimes 70 years. So I'm excited. That's why I love college football, and I can't wait for the rest of the season.
And that's where, if you want to look at the 1-week championship, that PJ Fleck says in his press conferences each and every week, all right, Minnesota's got Maryland this weekend. They're 2-touchdown favorites. Wisconsin's got Ohio State at Ohio State this weekend. They are 2-touchdown underdogs. And then Iowa travels to Northwestern, where they're 9-point favorites. If you want to just take it week by week, we can do that. Minnesota should win this weekend. Wisconsin should lose this weekend, and I think that Iowa versus Northwestern game is going to be a lot closer than what many people think, because Iowa's running game hasn't been able to get going, and they're facing a Northwestern front that I think is going to be able to stop the run again. And then how does Nathan Stanley continue to do throwing the ball as much as he's been. I think I saw the stat that Nathan Stanley is on pace to break Iowa's passing single season passing yard record, which an Iowa team that can run the ball is really weird to say. But this is where you're at. Where the Minnesota is the Big Ten West leader. They have a one-game lead. There's only five games left, and you got to take care of business this weekend at TCF Bank Stadium and what I think should be a tremendous atmosphere for a 2:30 game. You have plenty of time to tailgate. It's going to be at the peak of the afternoon heat, which is going to be 55 degrees. It's a beautiful fall temperature. Get to TCF Bank Stadium and support this team, Luke.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see how the Gopher fans show out for the Maryland game, and, you know, and obviously Penn State as well. You know, we talked to Eric Vigo about this in an episode a while back, right? You know, what's attendance look like? It has been on the rise a little bit. But, you know, the cliche is, you know, a number of fans are like, hey, win games and I'll be there. Well, they've won games. So then
they're winning games.
Yeah, but the comeback has been, you know, well, in the non-conference, it was like, well, they haven't played anybody. And talk to me once they've played in the Big Ten. They've now won four games in the Big Ten. And they'll say, well, they haven't played anybody good. And it's like, well, we're not going to – nobody should apologize for the schedule, right? Like, this is the way it happens. They literally did not make the Big Ten schedule, right?
Preach.
Yeah, like
preach.
They don't make the Big Ten schedule. This happens. It's a year to year thing. Like at the end of the day, this is how schedules are put together. They're not going to apologize for winning the games that they've won, even the games that were close. I don't know what fans want. At the end of the day, I don't think that winning actually is going to solve ticket and gate problems. I don't believe that. I think
it's a small part, but I think as we've talked about,
it's not the solution. I don't think it's going to happen. So at the end of the day, the Vikings are still doing well. The Vikings will probably get, you know, a number of tickets, or, you know, they'll still have all the interest that they have. College football is still not as big in this town or this market. But, you know, it's an opportunity. If you actually are wanting to get on board, support the team, show up, be there. That does matter, and you create that atmosphere. The same can be said for students, right? It is those people that show up that create that atmosphere. And this team at this point has deserved that. So I'm just trying to encourage people to go. In terms of what the schedule looks like in the end, you know, the Gophers are going to be favored in probably two out of the last five games. And I think probably rightfully so. Looking at the FPI, I know their odds have improved. They've got a 24% chance to get a 24% chance of the time they're going to win against Penn State. They're 35% against Iowa. Let's see.
I think that's too low for the Iowa one.
Yeah.
Being able to run the ball. Like, I would want to take my chances if I'm Minnesota in the way that their secondary has been playing, mm-hmm. with Nathan Stanley throwing the ball 40, 45 times a game. But
yeah,
I get it, because you haven't won in Kinnick in 20 years.
Yeah. Then you got Northwestern. The Gophers have a 75% chance of winning that game. And then you get to Wisconsin, you know, at home. You only got a 27% chance of winning that game. You know, I
27
think
is all, what ESPN says, huh?
That's, yeah, and I don't know how quickly they update this.
I don't know if these have been updated, but even still, if Minnesota, because I think this is going to be the scenario. As long as Minnesota just, you know, say they go 2-2 in their next four games. So you have Maryland, Penn State, Iowa, Northwestern. Say you go 2-2 in those. So you're 9-2 going into Wisconsin. That is going to be for not only the Axe, but it is going to be for a shot to go take on Ohio State and Indianapolis. Like, what else do you want from this season? Now, I'm sure many of you are like, well, just win it outright. Okay, now you're getting greedy. I mean, we're talking about a team that's done so many different things this year. And this is already a special season, and that's why you should be enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
Like Luke said, everybody is finding, or so the casual football fan, it seems like, is finding excuses to not buy in. Just buy in. Enjoy the ride. That's the part of the journey, is the ride getting there. And we've seen it in the download numbers. We've seen it, and I've seen it on Gopher Illustrated. We're setting records for the number of page views that we've get, and we're breaking page view records, and we still have 11 days left in the month. That's how excited people are about Gopher football, and that's okay. It's a college football team. You're supporting teenagers and young adults. That's the point of it. it's an innocent game that you're dealing with a Minnesota team that is putting up points after points after points with historic records being broken down. You have explosive guys on the outside. You have three talented running backs and a quarterback that has been as efficient passing the ball as anybody in the country. And then Joe Rossi's defense continues to do two things really well, and that's stop the run and them in big plays. And it turns out those two are a recipe for pretty good defense. So it's okay to be excited. Hop on board. Enjoy right. the ride coming up here. There's no shame in that. Just buy in, and I think you'll see that the journey is worth the reward.
All right, Derek, I ask you this every year, but I think it's worth repeating every year. You frequently talk about if you are going to be competitive in the Big Ten, you have to be peaking into November. Can you kind of give us your theory on you know, peaking into November and, you know, playing through November in the Big Ten?
Well, yeah, I think it's a combination of I do like talking about it because I think the statistics and the outcomes would prove the theory correct, and that the teams that are successful in November are the teams that end up finishing at the top or near the top of the division of the conference. And I think a couple things go into that. I think that obviously injuries play a factor. Teams accrue injuries, and it's certainly not an equal rate. The teams that are more banged up are not good. They're going to be at a disadvantage come November. I think overall the Gophers have done very well in that aspect. And then the other part is just we've talked about just developing. It's college football is so unique, and it's very, very different than the NFL insofar as the development that you get out of players throughout even a single season. We've given several examples on the podcast of individual players, but again, if you're able to, through coaching and through experience and through a multitude of things, get those guys who are playing to develop throughout the year and peak going into November, from a game plan perspective, from an execution perspective, and then an injury perspective, I think that should be the ultimate plan. I mean, that should be the path to success is keeping in November. So we've seen, I don't want to keep banging the same drum, but we've talked about some historic things happening this season. So I'll bring it up just one more time. We have seen Gopher football teams that have not had that trajectory. Teams that have had success earlier in the season, maybe had some upsets or in other words, the Gophers have not upset teams and had some early success, but then either through the course of injury or development or execution have, had a drop off in November. And that's ultimately not, but that's contributed in part to the, 50 plus year drought they've had in a conference, championship or playing at a championship level. So I would just say that if you were to go back and look at the statistics, it would back up the fact that the teams that are winning in November, it's not like pro football. Teams do not generally back into the playoffs. Like you can see from time to time in the NFL, your 9-7 team that backs in and things like that. That's not the way it is in college football. The teams that are playing the best in November are the teams that usually end up finishing at the top of the conference.
All right, so we want to thank everybody for listening. It's super fun to do this. We have a lot of fun, but most of all, we thank you that you listen. And, there are lots of you that listen, and we would greatly appreciate if you would rate and review the podcast on whatever aggregator you use, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, etc. There are a number of aggregators we're on. If they have a way to rate and review, we would greatly appreciate it. Even if it's a one star, you can say that we make terrible content. That's fine. I'm not going to take offense. I understand that, we have fun, and I understand that I'm not the greatest at this. You only listen for Ryan Burns. I get it. I get it. It's okay. It's okay. But seriously, we do have a ton of fun. We want to thank our sponsors, the Goal Line Club and Insurance by Burns. We appreciate them sponsoring us again and again. And thank you so much for listening. We're really excited to be talking about a 7-0 Gopher football team. Again, thank you, and go Gophers.